For over 35 years, Sealong Medical Systems has been bringing quality hyperbaric oxygen therapy equipment to the healthcare market. Now, with a global pandemic in full swing, that same equipment has been repurposed to treat patients suffering from COVID-19. Simple, effective, and easy to use, the Sealong Series 5000 non-invasive ventilation hood system offers an effective next step in treating patients who need respiratory assistance but aren't quite ready for intubation. When it comes to treatment and transport, make sure you've got the peace of mind that comes along with having the best equipment for both your patient and your staff. For questions or to place an order, you can contact Sealong on the internet at www.sea-long.com.
The content of this podcast is based on medical fact and evidence-based practice from credible authoritative sources, but is not a substitute for your institution's policies, procedures, common sense, or good judgment. The views and opinions are those of Eric Bauer and FlightBridge Ed in their entirety.
Hey everybody, Eric back with you. Today's podcast is going to be a webinar, and we're going to discuss a new piece of equipment that has come about during this last 6 to 8 months. And we know that the COVID-19 era has brought on many challenges. I just want you to open your mind and think about innovation and think about, you know, it's not how we've always done things. It's how we adapt to change. It's how we look at current practice and how we make changes to that practice. And I think the COVID-19 era is a great example of, we may have a lot of research, a lot of knowledge in the mechanical ventilation side, in the sepsis side, in the ARDS side, and we see all those different pathways intertwine in that COVID patient that decompensates. It ends up needing an advanced airway. It ends up on the ventilator. Well, what if there's a piece of equipment out there that is used to maybe prevent patients from escalating to mechanical ventilation? And that is what this webinar is about. It's about a piece of equipment called the Sealong helmet. And I'm going to introduce you to how this came about, the owners of the company, and I believe in this product, this piece of equipment, so much, because I truly believe it's going to change practice. It is research-based, it's evidence-based, and I think that the track record, based on its past use with two major teaching universities, with its use in the arena of ARDS patients in Europe, and what we've seen in the United States so far, it is only fitting that we bring this to the pre-hospital setting, and I think that you are going to be blown away. So join me for this webinar. Again, we're going to have 6 different podcast feeds here, 6 different people on here. So enjoy. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Sealong Helmet webinar. I'm joined by 6 colleagues, Mike Verkest, Robert Beckel, Matthew Gilbert, Chris Austin, and Colby Colbert, and Dr. Francione. How's everybody doing?
Doing great, thank you.
Yeah. Doing great. Good. Doing good.
So we are about to discuss just an amazing product. But before we start, I do want to, on behalf of FlightBridge Ed, LifeLink 3, and Sealong Helmet, we want to just give our condolences and for the death of Dr. Craig Manifold. We know he is a beloved medical director for NAEMT and a retired brigadier general, a member of the Eagles, and a medical director in a multitude of areas in the San Antonio, Texas area. And, you know, it is very, very difficult when you see somebody, you know, devote so much time and energy throughout their career to, you know, be a servant. You know, he was taken away from us way too soon. So our condolences to everybody, all his colleagues, and we are with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for introducing that, Eric. I really appreciate that. So on behalf of the entire team, I would like to welcome you all to a very special edition of a FlightBridgeEd live broadcast. And today is not about FlightBridgeEd at all, actually. Today is about an amazing and unique collaboration between LifeLink 3 and a company called Seelong Medical Industries. And at this point, I would like to introduce Colby Colbert, who is the Vice President of Clinical Operations for LifeLink 3. And Colby, thank you for joining us. And I would like you just to take it from here.
Yeah, well, thanks for the intro, Mike. I do want to give a shout out to Mike Burkest. Many people wonder why things are in Pacific time sometimes, or why this was rescheduled. And, you know, we care about our people and we consider Mike one of us. And Mike, unfortunately, was in the midst of the wildfires and it was pretty scary, I could imagine. So, Mike, we're glad that you're here with us and able to host this. So thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Family safe. Everything's sort of getting back to normal now, but it was a pretty scary situation. So I appreciate everyone's patience in having to reschedule what I think is a very important event. So I appreciate that, Colby. Thank you so much.
Glad to have you here. You know, I appreciate this opportunity and we're fortunate to have Matthew Gilbert and Chris Austin with us from Seelong Medical. And I've been looking forward to this for a long time to share this success story that was made possible by, you know, just a fluke you know, all the work that Robert Beckel did here at LifeLink 3. So I'll start off with LifeLink 3. You know, we're an air medical transport program based in Minnesota and Western Wisconsin. And we have grown. We're a consortium of 10 health systems throughout Minnesota and Western Wisconsin. And we're the largest air medical consortium by number of health systems that comprise us. And we consider ourselves an extension of all their facilities and really bring that tertiary level of care to the bedside out in outstate areas of Minnesota, Wisconsin, and the surrounding states, and pride ourselves in being early adopters of new technology and being innovative. And we've been in service now 35 years, and LifeLink 3 is quite the success story of three health systems in the state of Minnesota coming together to form one air medical program. And that's how LifeLink 3 was started. So if anyone wonders where the three came from, and they often ask what happened to the first two LifeLinks, and I tell them that it comes from the number of individuals that that comprise LifeLink 3 Start Now.
I'll take this opportunity to introduce another part of the LifeLink 3 team, and that's Robert Beckel. How are you doing, Robert?
Doing great, thanks.
So, Robert, why don't you just talk about really quickly, you know, your introduction to the Seelong helmets and, how, you know, just a quick synopsis of just how you guys went about identifying the need and employing this, and then, you know, figuring out how this is going to best work with the equipment that you currently use.
Sure. Well, you know, when of course the pandemic first started, we were kind of in the same situation probably that most transport programs were. We're trying to figure out how can we, if we should transport COVID patients, if we should put our crews at that risk, and if we do, how do we do it safely? And so we made the decision at first to only transport the patients if they are really posing no risk to the crews. I mean, they don't need any higher flow oxygen or any kind of airway procedures, or if they are already intubated. And that seemed like the best way to keep the crews safe. And that seemed like a reasonable decision at first. And then, of course, the information started coming out as we started learning more about the disease process and how patients do. And we started to find out that there's a large cohort of these patients that really do better if they can not be intubated. And so that puts us in a difficult situation because we still wanted to be able to transport these patients, but of course we wanted to do it safely. And so how do we provide high flow oxygen to these patients without putting our clinicians at risk? That was kind of the big question.
Yeah.
And yeah. I see Colby is back on.
Yeah, I see Colby's back. Are you guys still there?
Yeah, RJ said we're alive and well. Yeah, he blames the Mac. So I'll go with that. unsure what happened, but we got the blue screen of death and we're back. And I know Robert covered a few of the challenges that we encountered. But before I get into that, I would like to turn over to RJ Frasconi, who's been our chief medical officer at LifeLink 3 for 34 of our 35 years of existence. I'm going to switch my camera over to his location here and turn it over to him. So this is Dr. RJ Frasconi.
Hi, RJ Frasconi. I got to tell you that when I started in emergency medicine 42 years ago, we were just learning about germs. And we've come a long way since then, to the point where in the future, we're probably going to be concerned about infectious disease all the time and protecting our staff. And of course, the confines of a helicopter and the lack of really good ventilation inside of a helicopter really puts staff at risk. As Robert mentioned, we had learned early on that even though these patients present oftentimes very hypoxic, it's not necessarily a good idea to intubate them. It seems that with this disease, the lung tissue is particularly sensitive to an invasive oxygen therapy, high pressure therapy. So we were left with this dilemma of having these patients be extremely hypoxic and being ill, but maybe not being ill enough for intubation. And if they weren't intubated, then we didn't have a closed system to protect our crews. So we had to come up with something else. Remember that these patients are not sick enough for intubation, but they're still pretty sick. And we're often flying into venues that don't have much for advanced life support. So you're really kind of condemning these patients to sometimes very basic life support transport. It was an ethical dilemma for us. Hmm. I was aware of the fact that the helmets had been used quite successfully. Helmet approach had been used quite successfully in Italy. And I mentioned it to Colby, and Colby started looking into it as well. We thought of this as a possible solution where we could transport these sick patients and still keep our crews safe. So it was kind of, we were caught between a rock and a hard place and a hard place.
Yeah, and that's not a great place to be amidst a worldwide pandemic where not only are recommendations changing on a daily basis, sometimes it seemed like an hourly basis, but at the core of your beliefs, it was all about, of course, taking care of patients, but really making sure your crew members were going to be safe.
Yeah, we had to juggle all of that.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. So Colby, let's go back to you for a second. Now, we've talked offline a little bit about how you first learned of this helmet-based ventilation, and it was on a news broadcast.
Yeah, it was. It was on CBS Nightly News, and it was one of those rare times where I actually tuned into the news and something caught my attention. And luckily enough, it was early on in the COVID, where before we got numb to everything COVID and statistics and so on. And it was about this small company that was really trying to ramp up production in response to the perceived and anticipated ventilator shortage and how they were using these helmet, this helmet-based ventilation technique to utilize basically wall oxygen and wall medical air to provide oxygenation, in CPAP. So it was just in the next day, we had a medical director meeting, and our CEO and our medical direction team gets together once a month just to kind of talk about innovative approaches to things and what our priorities may be. And I brought this up on the news, what I had seen in the nightly news, and I shared it with RJ. And RJ, of course, was immediately familiar with it. And Dr. Steve Sterner, who's our interim CEO right now at LifeLink, is a longtime 40-plus year emergency physician and really has the patients and his employees, our number one priority. And he said, this is absolutely what we need to do. Let's make it happen. So yeah. I said, well, I don't know if it's been done in the pre-hospital arena before, but we got the team that will make it, that will make it happen. And I reached out to C-Long and I got a pleasant woman on the phone and I started asking her all kinds of technical questions. And she said, well, I really can't tell you that. I'm just someone helping out. She was sweet as can be. And I had our logistics and supply chain manager place an order online. And I told Dr. Sterner, I was so proud that we were going to order five of these so we could trial them. And he said, I think that this is not going to go away anytime soon. And if they're going to be back ordered for five, let's just go ahead and get a couple hundred and have them in stock and ready to go. So this isn't going away. So we did it. And in the meantime, you know, we had a problem in front of us. And so we made it a priority to protect our staff. And so I'll let Robert talk about his innovative approach to make sure that we are donning and doffing PPE. It was kind of back to kindergarten again, learning the basics of the things that we never knew about PPE before, even though it's not the first time we transported patients with infectious diseases. But I think that it was scary enough for us to take it a more firm look at it. So as time went by, we got a few of these C-Long hoods. I reached out to Chris on LinkedIn and I said, hey, Chris, I said, I'm wondering who I should talk to about these C-Long helmets. We're looking to put them in the helicopter. Not sure it's been done before, but it's something we'd like to share. And Chris said, the buck stops here. I'm the guy. And so here we are. And I thought this was going to be something great to share. This was a problem that not only LifeLink 3 had, this is everyone in transport. And, you know, we had to give a lot of credit to the University of Chicago and University of Pennsylvania for their work that they'd done, you know, in the hospital setting. But the work that they did reassured us that it was going to be okay for us to do it. So with that, I'll turn it over to Chris Austin and let him introduce himself and Matthew Gilbert and the individuals from C-Long.
Well, thank you. And I'd like to say thank you for taking the initiative and really caring about your people and your patients. And that's something that's we never get tired of seeing that. So thank you for that. But I'd like to start by introducing Matthew Gilbert. He's our business development manager, and he's instrumental in helping us distribute this product and informing people what it can and cannot do. And So thank you for this opportunity.
Yeah, thanks, Colby. And thanks, Chris, for that. I appreciate it. You know, the work that you guys are doing up there at LifeLink, you and Robert, Eric, and everybody on the team, is really not only we know that it helps patients, but it helps us. It helps us grow because our primary job is making sure you can do your jobs and do them safely and that you can get those patients from point A to point B. And feel confident that the equipment that you have is exactly what it needs to be, is going to do the job that it is designed to do, and that patient is comfortable and trusts the equipment. And the feedback we've gotten from you guys regarding how you've used it, you know, has helped us tremendously. But you know, we've talked offline about some of the stories. I can't wait to hear them again. They're always exciting. I've been in healthcare for 30 years, and I'll never get bored of hearing how someone treated someone, and this worked, and it was fantastic. But thanks for having us on. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. You know, we're happy to have you guys on here to tell the story because I think the relationship with LifeLink and C-Long, I kind of combined those there. That's okay.
I like that. You know,
Yeah, lifelong. Right. That's what we're going to do. But a couple of things. One, I think it's innovation in the face of a crisis, right? I think that is really the story that we want to tell today and really explain how these two companies and these two organizations came together to create and solve a problem that was facing the entire world, actually, right?
Yes.
So that's going to be really interesting. I also want to just give a quick shout out. If you're watching on any of the social media platforms, if you're watching on YouTube, we are taking your questions live as we're doing this broadcast. So if you've got a question, throw it in the chat or the comments on whatever platform you're watching. We have people monitoring all these, and we will try to get those answered as we get going through here. So I'll throw it back to Chris. So C-Long isn't a company that started last week ago. Tell us a little bit about C-Long and really what your place in medicine has been over the last so many years.
Well, that's a great question, and it's been evolving almost nonstop. But it really started with a couple of individuals who were very forward thinking back in the early 80s. And Mr. Long and an individual who Mr. Gerald Cox had a plastic injection molding company, and they saw the need for this product in helping saturation divers and things of that nature. So they invented the hood, and everything you see now around the world is a result of that. They kept on top of it and modified it, improved it until it came up with the current version. And long story short, they did this for a lot of years, over 30 years, and they were ready to retire. And myself, I have diabetes, a pretty bad case of diabetes. I have diabetic neuropathy in my legs, you know, circulation problems. And I had taken several dives in hyperbaric chambers and gave me instant relief. Of course, it's not going to do anything for the root cause of diabetes, but it treats the symptoms. And I could drastically reduce my insulin. I felt better. I slept better. I actually got to eat cookies and cake before I went in the chamber because I had to prop up my blood sugar level. I'm saying, man, this is great. I like this. But I wore the hoods. I wore the C-Long helmets inside the hyperbaric chamber. And I thought this was the neatest thing I'd ever seen. I felt like a spaceman, you know, in this space helmet in there. And seriously, though, I saw the technology behind it. And I had just retired after 30 years as an aerospace engineer working on some of the most advanced aircraft in the world, everything from the Black Hawk to the B-1, B-2 bomber. And I saw the technology, I think, had a huge potential. So we bought the company. We wanted to make sure that it lived on, and not only lived on, but flourished. So that's what we did. And then came COVID. But we were ready. We really were ready. We had a lot of help. We had people in the industry, people in the medical field who got it and saw what the potential could be, and came alongside us. When COVID hit, we were, if you saw any of those things, we were a little mom and pop working out of a shop behind our home. Yeah. Yeah. In Wasatch, Texas. Mm-hmm. And as soon as the first article hit, which was the Wall Street Journal, showed up literally at our door, and I didn't even know who he was and what was going on. And as soon as that story hit, that's when you saw it on a lot of the major networks. People started showing up at our home, and they weren't showing up in any negative way. They wanted to help. They wanted to come help produce these products and save lives and get them out there.
Wow.
And it was so refreshing, and it tugged on all our hearts to see people. I mean, we had doctors show up from Chicago with a suitcase saying, we need these right now. And our phone system was so inundated, and our email system was so inundated, they shut down. We went several weeks with no communication whatsoever because the system just couldn't cope with it. And that really bothered us because we knew there were people that needed this who couldn't get through. Who knows how many thousands and thousands of people. So by the time we got all that taken care of, it's probably along the time we heard from you, and we knew this was something that we wanted to be a part of. We had some extremely valuable people come alongside of us. One was Virgin Galactic. George Whiteside, the CEO of Virgin Galactic, called me up and said, Chris, we want to help. What can I do? And I said, well, we have four RF welding machines sitting at the manufacturer in New Jersey. Great group there, by the way. And he just paid for them. Wrote them a check, paid for it right away, and they were on the truck the next day to us. And within 5 days later, we had a crew from General Motors show up at our facility, and they built us a state-of-the-art manufacturing facility. And we went from building 100 hoods a week to now we build 1,000 hoods a day.
Wow.
And General Motors built us this beautiful facility. And we had calls from people from all over the world just said, whatever you need, you want to help. And it was so amazing.
That is really an incredible story.
It really is.
and really, I mean, just a testament to, you know, I think where we were as a medical community trying to battle this new disease that no one had seen. And obviously that's what captured the attention of Colby at LifeLink and trying to figure out what's going on. So Matthew, you're getting involved in this. You're involved. You're working with LifeLink. You're trying to provide a product that is a little bit out of the normal, something that we wouldn't normally see. And so how did that go initially?
It's funny. American medicine is slow to grab onto things, and it takes time. And sometimes a pandemic is what it takes to move the needle, I guess, a little bit. As several people have mentioned, this has been used in Europe for a number of years as a tool for before you intubate somebody. But with COVID, with the fact that this can show or can help those patients before intubation. You know, we don't want to intubate somebody if we don't have to, because we know that there's a high likelihood that they're not going to come off that ventilator. So if there's another steps, just even two or three more steps that we can put there, that's where these hoods come in. When I joined C-Long, it's funny because I've been here a couple of months now, and it's drinking from a fire hose times four. Very busy, trying to just get everything situated. But I saw the original news reports on the 10 o'clock news here locally in Dallas. And I told my wife, I said, man, that company's right down the road from where I live. That would be fantastic. Gosh, they have everything that I've ever wanted to do as far as a company goes. And now I'm here. So dreams happen, kids. Keep them alive. It's a great company. We have a great product. I love working with them. I love working with people like LifeLink 3. The interest, not only from hospitals and critical caregivers, but just from EMS, and not just here in the States, but all over the world, has been incredible. And we have calls daily from, South America, the Middle East, Europe, Canada, Australia, people calling us wanting the products. They heard about it on a news. Several of them heard about it through LifeLink, the posts that you guys have made, or they just browsing the web have found it and have wanted to order. Where the hospitals are concerned, this is a tool that could benefit them, but I'm very passionate personally about the EMS, realm and how you guys are using it, because you see those patients before the doctors do most of the time. And, where I'm concerned, it's not just the ability to give that patient, the oxygen therapy that they need, but protecting those crews, the flight crews and the ambulance crews and the other transport crews. There are those out there, and I'm sure this will be touched on later, but there are some transports out there that have made special body pods. It's almost like an incubator for an adult to isolate these patients, but it still makes it very cramped, very cumbersome inside an aircraft or an ambulance. Some patients won't fit, if they're too large or too long, for instance. And that's where this hood can come in and really help treat that patient and also keep the flight crews and the ambulance crews safe. So there's a passion there. And I think everybody on this broadcast shares that passion and really keeps us going every day.
That's awesome. Thank you for that great insight on there. And again, for those of you that are watching on our live stream right now, we are getting your questions that are being sent to me. Be patient. We are going to get into the nitty gritty, and that's where Robert's going to come in. People are dying to know. You had 200 of these things show up on your doorstep. LifeLink 3 is like, we got it. We'll figure out a way. And that's really where you came in. So tell us a little bit about your experience. You've got this device now. and you're sort of charged with trying to figure out how do we make this operational. And it's not as easy as some might think. So, Robert, tell us a little bit about your experience trying to figure this out.
Sure. So it all started with an email. Yeah, exactly. With the link to the article or the news broadcast, and you know, hey, can we do this? Like, okay, well, oh, by the way, we're ordering them already, so that was great. yeah, so there was obviously a lot of questions. We couldn't just take this and put it on the aircraft. We had no idea if this was going to work. We have, you know, certainly time or space constraints, right? We work in a small cabin that has limited ceiling height, limited door space. So that was the first question, was can this even fit in the aircraft? Can we use it? And then, of course, the safety aspect was the next question was, you know, does this actually provide secure seal that's reliable, that will actually keep our clinicians safe, and that will provide the therapy that we are looking for our patients? And of course, you know, the next question was, does it actually work with our equipment? Can we use what we have currently? Can we implement this, or are we going to have to, you know, get additional equipment, which, you know, would obviously delay everything and cost some additional money. So, these were kind of the first questions. A lot of other questions started popping up once I started getting into the nitty gritty of it. So, of course, with the environment the way it was, everybody's working from home. We are trying to protect our frontline staff, so we didn't go to our bases. We limited visitors and limited access to our bases. So I couldn't put together a team of people to work on this. So I kind of became the test, you know, the test director, and at the same time, the chief test subject. So I've logged a large number of hours in this helmet, so I can tell you how comfortable or uncomfortable it is. I felt pretty comfortable with it, actually. But that helped me figure out exactly how it was going to work eventually, because I could speak from my own experience. So yeah, it took about 3 months, exactly to the day, actually, 3 months of work to from the time I got the email to when we transferred our first patient.
That's pretty amazing. So you must have, your brain must have been going a million miles an hour, and I'm sure you lost sleep over this. But how were you able to test this device? You know, did you use mannequins? Obviously you said you used yourself, but like, what kind of things did you go through? I mean, you know, you've got ventilators that you're dealing with. You've got settings that you're trying to figure out. How did you go about all that?
Yeah, so I can actually, I'll share my screen with you. Yeah, I will show you some of the things that I was able to do, or we were able to do.
Yeah, that seems to be a lot of the questions that we're getting from the folks that are watching, and keep those questions coming. We really appreciate the input. We've got a ton of viewers right now, and that is amazing. But those are really wrapped around things like, you know, did you use high flow nasal cannula? Did you, you know, what were some of the technical settings? What are some of the things that you use? So absolutely fire away and give us all that stuff.
Yeah. So let's get into this. So obviously, like I said, you know, I kind of started going down the list of the questions that we had to answer before we could implement this. And first one was just the simple space, right? So I got to spend some time in the helmet in our helicopter. And the ceiling was the biggest limiting factor, but it fits quite well. It's, you know, it's not posing any risk to the patient or to the crew. It's not going to get damaged on the door or anything like that. So, and I'm a big guy. I'll admit that. So if I fit in there with this device on, I can fit most of our patients in here. So that kind of answered the first question. So that was a good relief. And then
I think that's a great place to start, right? Because if it doesn't fit, yeah, why bother, right?
Right, yeah. So that was a relief, actually. And so then I started getting into the safety aspect of it. And really, And this was the big aha moment. And it was also the big aha moment for all of our clinicians when we started doing the training. I kind of fast forward. Of course, the big concern was, does this actually seal? Does it protect our clinicians? And because we have the Hamilton T1 ventilator, which detects any kind of leaks quite accurately, I was able to just on myself, and I also used it then later on other clinicians and other volunteers to see if we detect any leaks in the NIV mode. And I put the device through PACES. I put it on this, you know, on the picture here, you can see I just have it at, on 10 of PEEP and 10 of pressure support, but I took the pressures quite higher and never detected any leak. So that was great. That was obviously the biggest concern for us. So from there on, it was a matter of figuring out if this was actually going to work, if this is going to provide the therapy that our patients need. And fortunately, we had some data on that. I could look up, you know, the work that the University of Chicago did and they did in Pennsylvania. And there are also some studies previously done, one by Dr. Patel and one by Dr. Ferrero, and they tested the helmet. One study was done to compare it to high-flow nasal cannula or to BiPAP or CPAP mask for patients in acute hypoxic respiratory failure. And the device did very well. It actually showed equivalent, if not superior. So that was good. And then, of course, Dr. Patel's study actually looked at COVID-19 patients specifically and looked at if the helmet use can prevent intubation and improve mortality in COVID-19 patients. And both of those answers were yes also. So that was also good information. So it seemed promising. It seemed like it was going to work. We reached out to Hamilton, to our rep from Hamilton, to see if they had any kind of settings that they would recommend to us to use with the helmet. And they provided us with a recommendation. I started testing that. And on myself, as well as on just our I have a little testing station design here. One of the things that I have available to me, fortunately, was that it's called the ASL 5000. It's a device manufactured by Ingmar. And it's a lung simulator. Very, very advanced lung simulator. And it was originally designed for research, and then it was also designed for actually ventilator manufacturers to test their products and to make sure that they work. And just recently, Ingmar, together with Lerdal, developed an educational use for this. So they actually embedded into like the Leap software for Lerdal. So you can actually use this product with any Lerdal advanced patient simulator. We have a SimMed, so we can use it with our SimMed. We can use it with SimBaby and other products. But so that was great. We actually were looking at this device to purchase it prior to, of course, the pandemic, but this kind of accelerated that decision. And, you know, it was like Christmas in April or whenever I got this showed up on my door. So, but it helped me tremendously, because what it allowed me to do is hook it up to the helmet and simulate basically a breathing patient with various tidal volumes, rates, various lung conditions, and actually seeing what the lung would feel in the helmet. So I can actually quantitate some of the things that we would otherwise just have to guess at, how the pressures applied to the helmet actually translate to the patient and to the lung. So I did quite a bit of testing on that, and initially everything seemed great. This was going to work. It provides a therapy that we were hoping for. But the next question was, which is a concern that probably comes naturally, is, okay, it provides oxygenation, but does it actually eliminate CO2? This is a very finite space, right? Very confined space. So at the flows that we can generate with the ventilator, with the settings that we initially were trying, or I was trying, that was a big question. So I became a test subject again, And I started measuring the CO2 levels inside the helmet. And you can kind of see on the left there that that number is not good. So, and this isn't even the highest level. So I probably killed a few brain cells while doing this, quite honestly. I think the highest level I measured was somewhere around 8,000. So that was concerning. So I was kind of back to the drawing board at that point because this was obviously not going to work. And I was kind of looking back at the literature, and pretty much everything that I had seen had suggested that you need a minimal flow of 50 liters per minute through the helmet. Otherwise, you're not going to eliminate adequate CO2. And I was with the initial settings, which were only accessing just one port on the helmet with a circuit and leaving all the other ports closed, I was only getting, the highest I could get was probably about 35. So obviously that wasn't going to work. So again, back to the drawing board and figured out, okay, well, we need to open up another port, obviously. We need to do it safely. So we got to put a filter on it and we got to put a peep valve on it so we can control the leak, so to speak, because that's what basically what we need to create is an intentional leak, other than, you know, obviously the seal.
Right.
So I started testing that, and it took a little bit of perfection. You know, I spent a lot of hours trying to figure out the exact settings on the Hamilton to basically trick the vent into compensate for the leak and be in the inspiratory mode as much as possible to create the flows that we needed. And so came up with those, and that worked great. So I went back to Colby with this and said, okay, I have the way we can use this. I have all the settings. I have everything. But by the way, can we get the high flow O2 mode on our vents? Because that is something that we had looked at previously as well, and seemed like that would be a much easier alternative. And so I reached out to our partners at Lakes Region EMS, who happened to have a Hamilton T1 ventilator with the high flow O2 mode on it. And they graciously let me borrow it and do some testing on it with the helmet. And it worked great. I mean, it was better than we could hope for. It's basically, you know, just like a high flow nasal cannula would be, but much safer. So on the right there, that's basically what you're looking at in the Hamilton T1 in the high flow O2 mode. You have two settings. You have the flow and the oxygen percentage. And so you can set it to flow, and the flow in our ventilators goes up to 80. So we can easily set it to 60, which we kind of decided to be our target. So set the flow at 60 liters per minute, the FiO2 at whatever the patient requires. And the beauty of it is you only need a single limb. You don't need a flow sensor. You don't need an expiratory valve, just a single limb circuit that you connect to the helmet and provide your therapy. And
so this, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Robert, but I just wanted to ask. So what did that do for oxygen consumption? Because you're running 60 liters a minute. What did you have to do to manage that?
Yeah. So a simple math would tell you if you're running 60 liters per minute at, you know, let's say 50% of FiO2, you're going to run at 30 liters per minute of oxygen in this mode. Mm-hmm. So that's a big concern. And, you know, we have a finite amount of oxygen on the aircraft, of course, right? So at best, if our tank is full on our Leonardo aircraft, we have about 1,200 liters of usable oxygen. So if you do the math at 30 liters per minute, that's about 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, if we were running 100% of FiO2, that's 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. So you can't really do a very long transport at these high flows, but you can do some. And so this was going to be one of the decision factors, obviously, before every transport was to figure out, do we have enough oxygen on board? And what FiO2 does this patient actually need to meet our target pulse oximetry So we totally changed our approach to oxygen because of this. We before we kind of, you know, we had a limited or kind of the minimum amount of oxygen that we wanted to have on board for every shift, for every transport. Now we actually approach oxygen similar to fuel, right? So first of all, our pilots know at any given time exactly how much fuel we have on board the aircraft, not just in terms of gallons or pounds, but time, right? How many minutes of fuel do we have on board the aircraft? And so we have to approach oxygen the same way. Our clinicians need to know at any given time exactly how many minutes of oxygen they have on board of the aircraft at a given flow. So we made this part of the daily routine. We made sure that they're comfortable doing this calculation. They can do it quickly and you know without without any difficulty. And then, of course, we also make sure that our aircraft are top all the time. So if we do a flight, we use oxygen. When that crew gets back to base or somewhere where they can refill their tanks, they refill their tanks and top them off. So that was kind of the big change in our approach. And that's what it takes to provide this therapy and to carry this device.
Sorry, go ahead. No, go ahead.
So, yeah, I went back to Colby, and with this recommendation that we get the iFlow2, Colby went to our leadership, and they said, sure, put it on. And so that was on a Thursday. On a Friday afternoon, I had the iFlow O2 delivery mode that I could install on our ventilators. So kudos to our leadership. I mean, they really spared really no expense. They gave me everything that I asked for in order to be able to do this and do this safely and continue to provide care for COVID-19 patients. The last piece of this was kind of figure out the exact settings. So that's what you can see on the screen there is, so those would be the NIV settings. I can talk about them real quick, just so I don't want to get too much into the details, but so the PEEP or CPAP, the minimum is 10. That's kind of what you need to just keep the helmet inflated, keep it sealed. And only about 70 to 75% of the PEEP that you're setting on the ventilator is actually going to be applied to the lungs. So you need to keep that in mind. Whatever the patient needs, go a little bit higher than that. Pressure support, generally, most patients will not need it, I don't think. The if they do, you know, just whatever the patient needs, anywhere from 0 to probably 20, kind of the usual. It's kind of interesting. I thought because of the helmet flexing that the pressure support would not translate very well to the lung, but it actually does and on the lower settings. So between kind of the 5 and 15, the vent will actually almost overshoot on the pressure support because it ramps up with every inspiration, and it ramps up the flow so much that it actually overshoots on the pressure support a little bit for a brief time. And then, of course, the helmet absorbs some of that. At the higher settings, 15, 20, then it doesn't meet the goal. It'll about 50% of that roughly will be absorbed by the helmet actually flexing. So that's something probably people keep in mind. But I would think very few patients would actually need pressure support. P-ramp on the Hamilton, if you're familiar with that, or pressure ramp, just turn it all the way down. We want that vent to obviously ramp up flow as quickly as possible to inflate the helmet first and then translate that to the patient. Flow trigger, inspiratory trigger all the way down. We want basically that vent to be in the inspiratory mode majority of the time. The only caveat being, if it's uncomfortable for the patient, if the patient is trying to exhale and the vent is still in the inspiratory mode, obviously that may be uncomfortable. So may have to start turning that up a little bit to increase the patient comfort, or for overshooting on the flow, then you might have to turn the trigger up a little bit. So It's not in the inspiratory mode as much. The nice thing about the Hamilton is it can ramp up inspiratory flow up to 200 liters per minute. So that's what allows us to compensate for that leak. And we can easily generate that 60 liters per minute of total flow through that helmet, over time. The expiratory trigger, just turn that all the way down, unless it's uncomfortable for the patient. Again, then it can start turning it up a little bit. Max inspiratory time all the way up, 3 seconds. Again, we want that vent to be in the inspiratory mode as much as possible to generate that flow. FiO2, that's obviously we want to achieve our target pulse oximetry. So turn that up as much as you need to, but keeping in mind the oxygen consumption. So you kind of have to do the math. And later we're going to talk about the first case. The first patient that we transported in this, and the crew did a fantastic job of doing the calculations and figuring out what was the safe FiO2 for that transport, and figuring out, making sure that the patient can tolerate it. So that's something that every crew needs to do before leaving that facility, is figuring out if the FiO2 that we can achieve safely during that transport is going to meet the patient's needs. And then the flow, obviously, that's the biggest thing. Is so you're shooting for 60 liters per minute. That's kind of our goal, again, to eliminate the CO2. And this gets a little tricky on the Hamilton. So basically, our flow is provided by the leak primarily, and then also a little bit by the flow getting back into the ventilator. So you have to add what the vent detects as a leak and what it measures as the minute volume, and add those two numbers together, and that's what gets you your total flow. And it's pretty easy. Hamilton gives it to you all on one screen. So it's easy to measure and figure out. And basically the flow is provided by the difference between the CPAP that you set, or the PEEP level that you set on the ventilator, and what you set on the PEEP valve. So if you want to have a PEEP of 12 on the ventilator, you probably have to set the PEEP valve to almost all the way down to 5 or 6 maybe. And that will give you the flow that you need through the helmet. As you start going up on the PEEP, you can start adjusting that PEEP valve to keep that flow around the 60. Otherwise, it'll overshoot. Or if you don't have a big enough difference, if you set your PEEP on the ventilator at, say, 12 and the PEEP valve at 10, or you're probably not going to generate enough flow. So that's how you adjust that. These are the NIV settings. And, you know, there are a few other caveats, so we can get into a lot more details, but it's otherwise it's pretty much the bulk of it.
Yeah. We had one question from Kevin Casey. Thanks for tuning into the live, Kevin. But there was a question about, have you had any feedback regarding using the helmet and Hamilton together, specifically with the use of coaxial ventilator circuits? Any thoughts on that?
Great question. Yeah, I forgot to mention that. So, that was one of the first things that we tested was our circuits. What we normally use is the coaxial circuit, and immediately it became obvious that that was not an option. The coaxial circuit, if you're familiar with it, the inner limb of the coaxial circuit is the inspiratory limb, and it is very flexible, and it is relatively narrow. So it doesn't handle the high flows very well, and it doesn't handle swings and pressures all that well, at least not the ones that you want with the helmet. You want a circuit that is rigid, that is not very flexible, so that it can respond well. It can just let the air that the ventilator is trying to get to the helmet, it's just letting through without providing a lot of resistance and without expanding and offering dead space. So that was one of the first things we identified, is that this was going to work much better with a dual limb circuit and a fairly non-compliant, fairly rigid circuit. So that was one of the first things we also purchased with the helmets, and that's what we're using.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense.
So Robert, yeah. I want to throw a question at you real quick, because I think the oxygen calculation formula, can you just talk about, I think there's a lot of programs that use the calculation formula. I know Air Methods uses it, and one of the differences with LifeLink 3 is the, subtracting 200 from that PSI is a safety. Can you talk about that?
Sure. That's it's one of the things we decided was just to have a reserve, just to make sure that we're accounting for any dead space in the system or any kind of inaccuracies. So that's just a reserve that we decided on actually pretty early on when we first started doing calculations for oxygen duration. So you can see on the screen, this is what we provide for our clinicians. So that's what we use to do the calculations for every transport. And the other reserve that we created there is a 10-minute in the flight time. So if your anticipated flight time is, say, 20 minutes, we want to make sure that we have 30 minutes of oxygen, usable oxygen on the aircraft. And if you don't, then we have to find an alternative, either alternative source, alternative transport mode, see if we can turn the oxygen down a little bit, whatever else we need. And the same thing for, we have to make sure that we account for every leg of the transport, right? So it's not just the helicopter. Surprisingly, I think the more challenging thing is actually just maybe the walk from bedside to the aircraft. Some hospitals, that can be a long distance and a significant amount of time. And a portable tank, a little D tank, doesn't really offer you a lot of oxygen at the higher flows. I think, if I remember right, at, you know, the 6 liters per minute, I think you get like 6 minutes of oxygen out of it or something like that. So it's a pretty short time.
Yeah.
But yeah, we just wanted to make sure that we built in reserves, and that's kind of the, little safety measures so that we really make sure we don't run out of oxygen mid-transport. And to make it even easier, kind of created a actual reference chart. So you can, if you want to do math at 3 a.m, or not good at it at that time, you can just look up a little reference chart and figure out how much oxygen you have.
Yeah. Well, that's great. So we've had a ton of questions come in over social media and YouTube. Thank you again for tuning in with us. But one of the big questions was people want to see the helmet. Show me the helmet. So I threw a message in our little presenter chat here, and they're like, well, of course we've got helmets. So I just, before we jump into our case review, I wanted to just to throw it to Chris Austin, who says, well, I'm surrounded by helmets. So do you want to describe the helmet real quick, Chris, as we get going here and transition to that case review?
Be glad to. We have several thousand right here on the wall. So just so happens. But this is the model that y'all were using for the testing. We do have two, this one, and we do have a smaller one that I think is going to bode well for your type of application also, because it'll slow down your oxygen usage by the volume is smaller. But this is what it looks like. You have ports here that you can put the flow in and out that way. You can put it on the neck sill area. You can pass through high flow lines or whatever you need that way. You've got a visor here where you can see better, a more optically correct area. But it's pretty robust. It's not a thin, device by any means. And then you've got a neck seal that seals around the neck to keep the pressure in. And pretty simple. That's it.
The beauty of the helmet, I'm going to pipe in there, Mike, if that's okay. Yeah. All of the hookups are standard 22 millimeter. They'll fit with any valves that may be on a helicopter or ambulance or in the hospital. There is a small valve, as Chris showed it, in the front between the two inspiration and expiration ports on the neck seal, can actually be clipped, and an NG tube can be run through it. You can run headphones through it. You can cut it open and put something there for comfort care, anything that could be necessary. All of the ports can be capped, as Chris mentioned, based on feedback from LifeLink and others, we actually created a helmet that's much smaller, by about 3.5-4 inches. So it reduces the volume of oxygen in the helmet, but also for the headroom inside the vehicle, helps a little bit there. That's all something very, very important. We've got a number of other innovations that that we have that can be added as well, large access ports that can be put on the helmets. One thing to point out is nothing on this is a metal. It's all vinyl and plastic. It's all MRI compatible. Everything on it is there's nothing sewn. It's all welded and put together. And if it's put together correctly, should not leak. We've run them 60, 70, 80 PSI with absolutely no leaks. Does blow the neck seal out like a frog, but the helmets actually don't explode or leak in any way. So I wanted to just point that out as Chris was showing it there.
Yeah. Yeah. And another question that came in was, what is your feeling or interpretation of high flow nasal cannula versus using the C-Long helmet? COVID of course doesn't bode well with high flow nasal cannula. And is there a chance this could replace the high flow nasal cannula? And from everything I know about it, it seems like the obvious answer is sure.
Yeah, that's true, and has for years. So,
yeah, I know. Colby, were you trying to chime in there?
Yeah, it's being driven by the same mechanism. So, you know, I'll chime in with one of our cases, kind of as it relates to that. You know, we acquired this product to solve a problem that was associated with COVID-19 and other infectious respiratory disease etiologies, and what we found is that. We don't know who these people are walking around COVID or not COVID. Yeah. So everyone's kind of COVID positive until proven otherwise. And our most recent case of the use of the C-Long product has been, was a BiPAP patient being managed in rural Minnesota. And our medical crew felt this person really wasn't comfortable on the BiPAP mask, was really fighting it. And, you know, they were all, garbed up with their PPE, ready to manage a patient with potential COVID. This patient was tested negative at the facility prior to us retrieving that patient. And our crew elected to use the C-Long because the patient wasn't comfortable with the mask and they thought, you know, let's try it. So they put the C-Long mask on with, and replicated the BiPAP settings on NIV mode. And manage the patient. The patient was way more comfortable in the C-Long helmet. And, you know, this is the way that we see managing patients right now. I don't, in the foreseeable future, I don't understand how we can effectively utilize and confidently utilize high flow nasal cannula in the transport setting with this unknown, with the inability to test these patients reliably at the bedside. So. That's where we are with that. And patient needed, I believe, 28% FiO2. So not a significant use of oxygen. The patient just needed some ventilatory support. So contrary to our first patient who was sitting, you know, in the low 70s, was COVID positive, and the referring facility just couldn't manage the oxygenation of this patient. They were thinking about intubating the patient, and when LifeLink arrived, they did place the C-Long helmet on, and initially started with a 70% FiO2 out of pure excitement for utilizing the C-Long helmet for the first time. You know, the FiO2 was overlooked, and immediately the patient was up in the 90s, and they were able to dial back the FiO2 after they realized that we didn't need a target FiO2 at 97% and someone that had spent some time in the 70% at best. They transitioned the patient to a tertiary care facility and helped that facility, who also had never seen this device before, transition them onto a high flow nasal cannula device, a standalone product. And then it's going to be a lot of education getting these referral and receiving hospitals. And anyone that's familiar with like an easy IO or adult IO needle of any kind, or the King Airways, when EMS would roll into emergency department with a King Airway in place, anything other than a combi tube, they're like
super confused.
Or you guys drilled the needle in someone's bone, and you know, within a year or two, they're in every crash cart throughout the hospitals and all units, and that's what I think the C-Long is going to end up being, or helmet-based ventilation. And so here we are, and the referring facility that sent us our first patient that we put the first C-Long helmet on, they were so impressed by it. The physician's assistant that was staffing the emergency department that day insisted that their leadership purchase C-Long helmets. We gave them the name and contact information for Chris, and they reached out, bought several of them, and have utilized them several times since. And they sent patients out by ground and air since then on the C-Long device. One thing that we didn't talk about is that many of the individuals that utilize C-Long helmets in the hospital setting don't use a ventilator at all. They use several flow meters, a combination of air and gas, or air and oxygen, I should say. And they have multiple resources out there through the University of Chicago and the University of Pennsylvania to titrate those flow meters up to 3 flow meters and tell you exactly what setting to put the oxygen flow meters on and the air flow meter on to achieve a desired FiO2. And, you know, that's how this came into play to reduce the number of ventilators that may be needed in a pandemic situation. So didn't want to throw it out there. It's not all practical for ground or air to have multiple flow meters. I did want to touch base on a question was asked, do we have liquid or gaseous oxygen on board our aircraft? And we have gas, as Robert alluded to. But anyone that has liquid oxygen, I'd caution that the higher flows, we know that at high FiO2s, at high flows, you can freeze those lines up in the aircraft. So always be cognizant of that. Our general consensus was if someone needs over 60% FiO2 and they're in need of BiPAP, whether you're delivering that by a mask or a helmet or a mask, you're going to have to be really conscientious of your gas use as well as potential to freeze up lines in a liquid oxygen type system.
Yeah. Interesting. We had another question that I'll throw to either Matt or Chris or Colby or Robert, any of you guys, but what about pediatric use? Is there any utilization at all for that pediatric population?
Chris, I'll let you take that one.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. It's been used very successfully in Europe and here, and I wish I had this in front of me, but I have a picture of my 2-year-old granddaughter in the helmet, and it really works well because essentially what you do is use it as on an adult, but you cut the opening in the neck seal to go around the abdomen and the waist area, so everything from here up is inside the hood, and the kids have a blast. I've got video of my granddaughter in there, and she's just having a ball, you know, playing with the insides. You can give them they give them markers, and they can mark, you know, dry erase markers to mark in there and stuff. They just do really well.
We also manufacture a neck seal that is much wider, and actually it's designed to go over somebody maybe wearing a C-collar. And it can actually be taped with like a Tegaderm around them, and it will seal that way. And you can use that in a pediatric application as well.
Wow, that's great. So yeah, we kind of transitioned. Go ahead.
I just want one of the biggest benefits and one of the reasons why we decided to go on with the C-Long helmet is that the collar actually, and maybe Chris, you want to point that out. The collar, when you first get the helmet, the collar is intact. And you cut it to size. So you measure the patient's neck and then you cut it specifically to that patient. So there's no need to carry a number of collars or different sizes, and you can tailor it to each patient.
Yeah, well, that's wonderful. All right, so we sort of hit the case review a little bit. Eric, did you want to talk a little bit about the fact that maybe not everybody's got a Hamilton, right? And so the question has come up and has actually been asked is, what about other ventilators? What do we know about that? Do you want to speak a little bit to the best of your knowledge about that?
Yeah. And before I do that, I do want to just point something out. We talked about this on kind of a pre-show talk. And I think Chris and I were talking about this, and it comes back to the question about the high flow nasal cannula and how it compares. Right. I mean, if you think about what you're doing is you're making a false environment. You're actually raising, you're manipulating Dalton's law. And you're increasing partial pressure inside of, you know, you can be at whatever altitude you want, but you are altering that environment. And that's exactly why it's so much more beneficial than just high flow nasal cannula technology. So I just wanted to point that out, that is really what you're doing. And it goes along with really the initial invention of using it as a hyperbaric therapy.
Right.
Chris, do you want to add anything to that? Or I think that's just very important to point out.
No, you're right. And couldn't have said it better.
Yeah. So I was able to use this with two different ventilators. You know, as Robert articulated perfectly, he was able to do a lot of the homework. And so I did have some starting points to go off of. I was able to test this with the Revel and the LTV 1200 really briefly on an event called the Allied AHP 300. I do want to do some more tests, so I'm not really going to discuss that ventilator. Have not had an MV plus or an impact vent to try it on. But with the Revel ventilator, the LTV 1200, and as they articulated, I think, again, perfectly, this does not have to have a ventilator to use. You can use a Venturi adapter. You can use multiple oxygen sources to drive that flow. But for the Revel, for example, LTV 1200, the settings were very, very similar. And as Robert pointed out, you know, the Hamilton is really good at measuring that leak. Every ventilator is different. Every ventilator has different technology. And I think that's where it's very difficult to talk about one ventilator over the other.
Sure.
You know, for the Revel, what I found is, and Robert said it, anything less than 10 a peep, it did not work. You got to have at least 10 a peep. We found that if I turn the peep down lower than that, then we had, the patient, the gentleman that I was using it on was air starved. I turned the trigger all the way down to one. Rise time, I really, Robert talked about turning the ramp on the Hamilton to zero or turning it off. The Revel does not have that capability. It is either a one or a nine, you know, in that range. And really talking to the gentleman that I had this applied to, he felt the most comfort at a rise time of six. Tried it all the way from one to nine. Eye time, I turned that up to a 3-second eye time. Flow termination of 10%. So that's just giving a very much larger breath on that pressure supported side. And then the time termination we set at 2 seconds. So again, I spent a couple hours on the Revel specifically titrating to multiple settings. I also will say that the peep valve that was applied to that oxygen source, or excuse me, to the exhalation side, if I turned it up higher than five, the flow was not sufficient. So I found the same exact thing that Robert said. So, you know, the peep valve had to be at five or less to get proper flow. I was able to test it on the LTV 1200. The leak compensation on that vent is only 5 liters a minute. You compare that with a Revel, that's 80 liters a minute. And you compare that with a Hamilton, is 200 liters a minute. Big difference. Again, every ventilator is different. And I was able to maintain the same exact settings as that I had the Revel on. Again, just specifically CPAP. I did not go bi-level. And I had the settings at the same as I did the Revel. So that's two other vents that I were able to get to work with those settings. I know Robert, you can, we can give your email out. I'll give my email out, and a lot of you know how to contact us through the FlightBridget website, and I will give you these settings and you can try it for yourself.
Yeah, that's great. Good information. Hey, we've got a few questions that I would love to get to real quick as we're approaching probably the last 10 or 15 minutes of the broadcast here. So thank you for the great questions. And I'm just going to fire these off here. And Chris and Matt, this one will be for you. This one is from Chris Delp on Facebook. He says, I'm familiar with the enormous reduction in mortality in helmet ventilation versus face mask in ARDS. Is there any preliminary unpublished data that there is even greater mortality improvement in COVID patients? He says, I assume that there is.
Well, that's another great question. And there is. I'm not going to quote you direct numbers because it has a lot to do with the facility and various other variables. But the numbers are better than what we were seeing with traditional ARDS. And getting better as we go along and people become more accustomed to using the helmet earlier on in the process instead of treating it as the last resort, where in fact it should be the first resort before you even move into that area of having to react.
Sure.
Well, and I'll add something to that. That is, I love what he just said, because that is exactly the thought process with the whole concept of pseudo ARDS, that we, we truly, do we have the amount of patients that we really believe are in full ARDS, or do they progress to ARDS because of atherogenic causes, right? And it's not malicious. It's not because of poor care. It's because of, you know, the ARDSnet trial said use lung protective strategies, and it's been shown that if you get recruitment within that first 24 hours and you're more aggressive, maybe going inverse or maybe going APRV, you know, watching your fluid administration, watching those types of things, that these patients tend to, you know, get better much quicker. So I love what he said about early identification and going this route. You know, what I will say, we're gonna actually put this out as a Flight Bridget podcast. We will post any studies, any relevant data that they have, they could supply anything from LifeLink 3 in the show notes on the Flight Bridget website, so you can access all that. That is really what we're here for. Flight Bridget is here to kind of be the vehicle and to promote Sealong Industries, promote LifeLink 3 and the efforts that they have done to improve the potential clinical outcomes of these patients.
Yeah, absolutely. And that includes a ton of pictures that Sealong was absolutely wonderful in providing. So we will get all that stuff up to you. I got one more question, and then we'll start getting ready to wrap things up here. And it's a very pragmatic question. It was literally, I was so enthralled by listening to the discussion tonight. But let's take it clear back to the patient experience wearing the helmet. So a question came in was, what is the operational, like, how do you do it? Do you hook it up to the vent first? Do you hook it up to the wall first and then put it on? Do you piece it together? How does the patient react? Because if somebody's hypoxic, we know how that goes, trying to get them on CPAP, trying to make them feel better, try to coach them. Maybe in some cases we give them a little something to bring them down a little bit, but how does the patient actually react and feel initially in getting this helmet on them? And I'm not sure who wants to take this. Maybe Chris or Matt or Colby, if you guys have some thoughts on that. But what's the patient experience like?
Probably Colby or Robert or Eric for that aspect. I want to cover actually, you know, getting it off the patient, especially accessing an airway. They may want to cover that as well, but
I'll throw it over to them.
Yeah.
Like, how do you talk to your patient?
All right. Yeah. So I think that from a standpoint of same exact criteria as bilevel ventilation, right? They got to be conscious. They got to be alert. They have to have a good intact airway. I mean, those are key things.
Sure.
You know, Robert, what do you think from the standpoint of comfort and anxiety and maybe address, can you use an end-tidal CO2 nasal cannula while you're using it? Does it mess with the seal? Does it cause more leak? Is it warranted?
Sure. So I'll start with the end-tidal CO2 real quick. Yes, absolutely. It is accurate. It is reliable. You can use a, that being said, that is if you use a smart cannula, obviously putting an end-tidal CO2 probe on the helmet doesn't provide you any information, usable information, but you can certainly put a smart cannula on the patient. It's very accurate, very reliable. And I would say in some patients, if you're worried about their ventilatory status, it's certainly pertinent to do that. To the comfort level, so from just my experience, spending, again, hours in the helmet, yeah. As long as you're not claustrophobic, it is very comfortable. The constant flow through the helmet keeps the environment cool. There's no issues with getting very hot or anything like that. Because it is clear, it's a clear plastic, and especially if you put that kind of that clear area to the front, you can see very well. You can hear, so you can communicate quite well. We did try to put the helmet on a couple of our clinicians that are claustrophobic, and they were uncomfortable. Our first patient did have some discomfort with the helmet too. So a little anxiolytic, maybe prior to the application or during while they're in the helmet, it's probably not a bad thing for those patients. But even claustrophobic patients can tolerate it being in it. Again, a little anxiolytic might be a good idea. The actual application, obviously if it's a COVID patient, you don't want the vent to be going while you're applying the helmet until you have a seal, right? So that gets a little tricky. So you have that very short time while you're putting the helmet on the patient. Important step is to not have the vent circuit connected so the patient can actually breathe while you're applying the helmet. And as soon as you have the seal, just connect the circuit, hit start. If you have the vent already on, prepared, ready to go, just hit start. And it takes just a few seconds. And that helmet pressurizes and fills very quickly. After that, it's very comfortable.
Great. Whoever submitted that question on social media, thank you for that. I think that provided some great sort of intuition on those pragmatic things, like what's the patient experience with that? Go ahead.
Sorry, I really just wanted to cover this on as a segue from what Robert said, and it's the fact that how do you get it off? If a patient has an emesis or whatever event, and you need to access an airway or something critical like that, our hood's two pieces. There's a neck seal, there's the helmet, and it's held together with plastic clips. And we've had problems with the clips in the past. Those have been redesigned. They're extremely strong now. But you can pop those clips off in under 5 seconds, 5 to 10 seconds, and then remove the hood without having to unhook the entire system. And that allow you to access that patient's airway quickly, easily. And then if you can or need to reassemble the hood, it'll be fairly simple to do so. I wanted to point that out. I'm sure somebody would probably think, why didn't I ask that after this is over? So, but we get asked that question a lot.
No, that's perfect. I appreciate that.
This was new for COVID. That we came up with a lot of these new features. So.
Sure. Yeah, it makes perfect sense. Dr. Francesconi, anything, last thoughts, final thoughts from you, sir?
Well, I was just going to say that in my 34 years as a medical director, that it's not at all unusual for innovative products to be introduced to the House of Medicine by EMS. Colby mentioned the EZ-IO. There's been many things. The Endotrol was introduced by EMS. Different bags were introduced by EMS. The ACD, impedance threshold device, introduced by EMS into the hospital. So the great thing, one of the great things about being a medical director is we can decide what we want on Thursday and have it deployed by Monday. It doesn't have to go through 17 different committees.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah. So that's all I wanted to emphasize is it doesn't surprise me at all that this is being introduced by EMS.
That's great. All right. So let's go around the horn here real quick and we'll finish up with our friends from CLONG here. But let's start with Eric. Any final thoughts as we start ramping down here?
No, I think that we have hit on the high points of the CLONG helmet, the partnership and friendships that have been made. And I think the whole point of this from the Flapper Jet side was just to provide a vehicle to get this information out and let the experts that have done all the work and have been innovative in their thinking tell their story and get that information out. As I said, we will put this out as a Flapper Jet podcast, and we may do some follow-up case studies. I think that would definitely be well served in this time. And, I want this to be a vehicle for anybody in the world to, whether you're a small EMS agency with a very low budget, tight budget, you have just as much of a need as a big flight company that may have a larger budget and maybe have a larger training team. So, I want this to be all encompassing. And I think that is where we can impact the most patients possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's good stuff. Colby, let's go to you, sir.
Well, I'd just like to thank Chris and Matthew for their partnership. Obviously to you and Eric and our individuals behind the scenes. I know Evan's working hard, feeding us the questions and, so I appreciate the partnership there. And then you know, really to our team. You know, Robert alluded to the fact that we have a leadership team that's supportive. And, you know, LifeLink 3 is always known for having a board of directors and a senior leadership team that supports not only keeping our patients and our crews safe, but being innovative and finding new ways to solve new problems. And that's what we did here today. And, you know, I can't acknowledge Robert enough for his pioneering of making the square peg fit in the round hole and his tireless efforts to test this and run it through the paces, because we all know those clinicians that are going to be the naysayers or find ways to shoot holes in our theories. And Robert knows of those questions and who those people are. And he addressed every question along the way. And he continues to find new ways and new things to continue to make this product better. And, you know, we have the ear of Chris and Matthew continue to do that better. And, you know, we're an open book. We, you know, just like they say, safety is not proprietary. Neither is the hard work that we put into this. We don't want anyone to have to replicate. And as they said, not everyone has access to Hamilton ventilators. Not everybody has access to an ASL 5000. The test lung, basically, if you will, on steroids. And, you know, we're here to help. And I know that we'll put our information up. Maybe Evan can put it up on social media. Our contact information as well as C-Long's. Because I know that people have questions, then we'll obviously look for it in the show notes in the Flybridge Ed podcast. So thank you again.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's wonderful. I appreciate all that. Just real quick, Colby, if someone wanted to get a hold or find out more about LifeLink, how would they do that?
Visit our website at lifelink3.com. That's lifelinkiii.com. And also find us on Facebook, like us on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. We're on all those levels, and feel free to submit questions or reach out to us through any of those mediums or info@lifelink3.com as well.
And I just have one quick addition, and that is that Emily and Bruce are also manning all those airwaves out there trying to find our questions for us. I just want to give a quick shout out to those guys. They were texting me like, what are we, chopped liver here or what?
It's late. I have to give Emily. Emily is normally in bed by now, so it's impressive.
Yeah, she said the same about you.
Yeah.
let's turn it over to Robert real quick. Brother, it just is a testament to your hard work, your diligence, probably a lot of frustration on your part, but this wouldn't have happened without you. So what kind of final thoughts do you have, advice for other folks that are looking into C-Long?
Well, thanks. And thank you, Colby. This was a really rewarding process. I mean, it was, like I said, about a 3-month process from start to finish. And it was great to see it implemented. It was great to see it actually working on patients. And obviously, that wouldn't happen without our clinicians, without our teams actually taking to the education, the training, going through it, making sure that they're confident and comfortable with it and proficient and actually putting it to use. So that was good to see, and kudos to them and everyone. We're going to continue to learn. This is not, you know, we're not at the end. We're still learning little pearls and learning better ways to utilize the helmet. And we're going to continue to do that and continue to revise our policies and our protocols and how we do it. And we're still going to share that information. And like Colby and Eric said, yeah, we'll share what we learn. I have no problem with, you know, sharing my email address and answering any questions people have anytime.
That's wonderful. So if somebody wanted to reach out to you, what is your email?
It is rbeckl, so rbeckl at lifelinkiii.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Robert. All right, let's kick it over to Matthew Gilbert again, who is with C-Long. Final thoughts from you, sir.
Well, first, let me say thanks for having us on. This has been fantastic. Thanks to everybody for listening. We are continually innovating this product. We're continually working with teams like LifeLink 3 to make this better for patients, but also for caregivers. We want to make sure that everyone is safe and gets through this as best as possible. We're all tired of COVID, but we all know it's not going away anytime soon. So how do we make this, you know, as pleasant and as innovative for everybody as we can? And so thanks to everybody for that. You know, I'm just excited to be a part of this journey.
And finally, we will wrap it up with Chris Austin. Thank you, I guess, on behalf of LifeLink, Flight Bridget, for joining us tonight. And thank you for your vision and your diligence in coming up with innovative solutions to save lives.
Well, we couldn't do it without people like Robert and the rest of you who embrace it and see what the potential can be. And not only that, but they're willing to do the work to push the envelope and to show us a path that someone else has never seen before, and willing to have a management structure that can make it happen too. That's so valuable that I can't even begin to say. But if we can help in any way, we would drop everything to do that. And not just for all of y'all, which we definitely would, but for anyone, because if we can save one life, that's enough. We know that there's a lot more potential than that, but just one is enough. And that's where our heart is, as is yours. And we appreciate that. And I want my information to be available if anyone needs it, anytime. If they have products and need explanation, if they have questions, if they have concerns, please contact me, or Matt, or any of us here at CLONG. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And I was just going to say, you can find CLONG at csea-long.com on the old interwebs there. But Chris, how could somebody get a hold of you if they wanted to do that?
Well, you can contact me at my direct email address, or you can use the CLONG email address. The main one is sales, just sales at csea-long.com. But my address is CASR, which stands for Chris Austin Sr., at CLONG.com. Same thing, SEA-LONG.com.
Awesome. And I'm sorry. I was just going to say, and Matthew, if they're interested in getting a hold of you, how could they get a hold of you?
Yeah, you can email, of course. It's Matthew, M-A-T-T-H-E-W, at C-LONG.com. You can also call me at the office, 502-969-4949, extension 2. And that's my direct line, and I'm happy to talk to anybody, answer questions, set up training of any kind, facilitate introductions to LifeLink. Of course, you can contact them, but we're happy to be the middleman there as well. So anything we can do to help anybody in need.
Well, that is great. So I will wrap us up on behalf of LifeLink 3, CLONG Medical Industries, and Flavor Jed. You've been watching a special edition of a live broadcast talking about medical innovations and collaboration to improve patient outcomes in the COVID-19 era. So again, Mike Verkest with Flavor Jed. We will end this for now, and we will talk to you all soon. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you later.
This has been a production of the FlightBridge Ed Podcast, leading the way in pre-hospital critical care and emergency medicine education.